So in engaging in Buddhist life, in Buddhist practice, it is very important to have a teacher. It's very important to have spiritual friends. And it's very helpful to have an ally for your practice. And one of the most significant teachers, spiritual friends, and allies you can have is your own breath, your own breathing. Mindfulness of breathing is one of the most significant forms of Buddhist practice. It's one of the most universal. You find it in many different Buddhist traditions. And there are many teachers who have said that the whole path of practice can be accomplished through mindfulness of breathing. Mindfulness of the breathing can be your teacher, your friend, and your ally. We know that the many different spiritual traditions have put a lot of emphasis on the value of breathing and breath. And you see that even in language, that where the soul or the spirit is often connected to the breath. I love the story in Genesis where the meaning is that human beings are made of the earth, from the earth. We are of the earth because of that, someone shaped us out of clay. And then that clay shape was breathed into, and it was the breath of God that brought life. And so the breath and the spirit of life is deeply embedded, not just in Judeo-Christian traditions, but in many, many different spiritual traditions. And I'm very fond, as some of you have heard too many times from me, that I love the idea that the word spiritual has in its genesis in Latin the meaning of breath. Like in the word respiration, we have the word there, that's very clearly. And so the expression spiritual inspiration has the word breath in both words. And the word animate, what animates life, is also in Latin, anima, connected to the word meaning air or breath. So even as I'm talking now, taking a little pause, I connect to my breath and feel my breath, feeling what's done to me to give this talk and so far, and get a little bit excited about talking about the breath. And I see how it's affected my breathing. It changes how my breathing is just to do that. And I check in and then it kind of changes a little bit and relaxes. So how is it for your breath sitting here today, this morning? How's your breath? How's your breathing? Have you been paying attention to it, or have you been ignoring it? Your breath can only be your teacher if you pay attention to it. It's very easy to go through life without ever even noticing that you're breathing. But I think the values, the spiritual values of the breath, occur when there's awareness of breathing. So there has to be some way of checking into it and being aware of it, letting it, the breathing, the inhalations, exhalations occur in the field of awareness. So already then, things are starting to change because you're starting to be aware. And seemingly, the breath is responsive to that awareness. Seemingly, the breath is responsive to just about everything in your environment. All kinds of different situations and reactions and feelings you have, and somehow seems to impact the breath. The breath is a very sensitive organ, provided that you are relaxed to begin with. If you're uptight and tight and tense with your breath, the breath has very little opportunity to be influenced by situations and change, and it may be adaptive. I like to use the idea of H2O as an analogy for the breath. H2O can take different forms. When H2O takes the form of water, it's quite malleable. It can take the shape of any container that you put it in. You push on the water, it gives quite nicely, and it makes kind of a ripple wave that kind of goes out nicely. Water has wonderful properties of resilience. But as soon as that water, that H2O, becomes ice, then it loses some of that, a lot of that, most of that resilience, malleability, shapefulness. And if the ice is really thin, it's actually quite brittle. It breaks really easily. And if it's really solid, then you can hardly move it. You can't shape it at all unless you take a chisel. And so the same thing with our breath. There are times where it can be quite fluid, and not as fluid as water, but the way the breathing moves through our body, the way our body responds to the breathing, the way there can be a lot of fluidity. The body can respond and shaped and quite a bit by the breath. Or if our breathing, our torso, our rib cage, our diaphragm, our stomach are held tight, then you're not going to get much movement in the body. And the rhythmic way in which the body can respond to breathing is not going to go very far, because it's going to meet that resistance of being frozen. One of the things that I've begun to notice now that I've been teaching for many years is that there are some people who've been practicing meditation for many years, and for some reason or other that I don't quite understand, they seem to have never really learned how to breathe well or naturally. And some of that is certainly my fault, because I haven't talked about it very much. And in our tradition, when we talk about mindfulness of breathing, we always, almost always, make it very clear. This is not any kind of yogic breathing. You're not supposed to change your breath. You're supposed to bring mindfulness to your breathing and just be mindful of the way it is. And so that can lend itself to some idea that, oh, well, I'm not supposed to change my breath or do anything about my breath. However, I think that before a person learns to meditate well, they should learn how to breathe well as a foundation. And breathing well, for me, mostly means that they start freeing up their breath. Now, generally, if you practice mindfulness, the breath tends to become freer as you do it. So it's a wonderful kind of mutual relationship. The more free your breath becomes, the easier it is to meditate. The more strong or developed your meditation becomes, the more your breath becomes freer. But some people, I think, they should spend some time actually freeing up their breath as a foundation to really get good meditation going. There are many different kinds of meditation practices. Some have nothing to do with the breath at all. But even then, I think it's helpful as a preliminary to have the breath kind of relaxed and flowing. Sometimes in our tradition, some people like to follow their breath at the nostril. And that's a fine place to watch the sensations of the air going in and out. But again, I think it's much better to do that after the person has freed up the torso, the rib cage, the diaphragm, the belly, the back rib cage, the shoulder blades a little bit, so that the body feels like it's kind of like a bellows, like a balloon that expands and contracts, like something that really can move and kind of like water. So that wonderful diaphragm of ours, when it moves, it can really kind of move through the whole, the effect of it can move through much of our body. I don't know a lot about the physiology of breathing. Some people here might know a lot more. But the impression I have is that what I understand is that the diaphragm, which is apparently a big muscle or connected to muscles, is it a big muscle? The muscle, actually a muscle, is one of the few muscles in the body which is not connected to a bone. And it's connected to many other muscles and through tendons and ligaments, I guess, that kind of spread out in many different directions from that place in the diaphragm. Is that right? Close enough?
It's attached to the
rib cage. Is it actually directly attached to the rib cage? Yeah. Is it attached also to the psoas muscle?
Yeah.
It's also attached. Intertiginate. And my impression is just the diaphragm itself is attached to many different parts of this whole torsac cavity.
Thoracic.
Jurassic. The ancient thoracic. So as we breathe, if the breathing is really relaxed, if the rib cage is really relaxed, then that breathing can affect many different things. And what's very interesting to do is to watch how the breath changes, depending, for example, on our reactions and responses to the world, to our emotions, our thoughts. And I'd like to give you, have you do one small exercise to give you some sense of this. So you might sit up straight so that your belly is a little bit relaxed. And And then place a hand on your belly, or just kind of around your diaphragm. And feel the movement in your diaphragm. It helps if you can relax your belly there. And feel the movement in your diaphragm, the lifting and falling, the movement back and forth as you relax and feel there. Can I get a sense of what that movement and sensations are? And then keeping your hand there to notice how things change, open your eyes and then stare intently on a spot in front of you. Really stare, really fixate the eyes really intently, really kind of bore into that, like a laser, bore into that spot that you're looking at. And as you bore in, does that change your breathing at all? Notice how you might change your breathing in the diaphragm area when you fixate the attention that way. And now, with your eyes still open, see if you can soften your gaze to be aware of the peripheral vision, kind of the whole room, the whole space around you, very open. It's not really fixating on anything with your eyes, but kind of just aware of a really wide sphere of what's going on. And as you have that wide gaze, does that change your breathing there? Okay, so you can stop. So some of you nodded your heads, and I think, I'm sure that for some of you the exercise didn't show much. That's fine. Everyone's different. But often we see a tendency that when we fixate the attention in some way, that it affects the breathing. Some people have probably experienced it, the breath got tighter or shallower, or kind of maybe lifting up a little bit of the attention. And when you relax the gaze, it relaxes the stomach area here. And there's nothing wrong with that. In many situations, it's appropriate. But what happens often is that we can live a life that's fixated. We can be preoccupied with certain thoughts and ideas, and we could be kind of always, in some part of our mind, kind of locked in there, fixated on that. We can be fixated on certain emotions. And even though they can almost be in the background of our attention, the foreground, we can be aware of all kinds of things. In the background, there's something that's going on there where there's some part of the mind is fixated and held. And that fixation of part of our attention, part of our mind, is going to affect our breathing. And it holds our breathing in different ways. And I have a great, what I think is a nice kind of list of the way certain emotions tend to affect the way some people often breathe. Anger. The breath tends to have shallow inhalations and strong exhalations and tension throughout the body. Fear. Rapid, shallow, and irregular breaths with tight knot in the abdomen. Grief and sorrow. Spasmodic, sobbing, superficial breath with hollow, empty feeling in belly. I often think of grief and sorrow, it's very high, the in-breaths are very high up in the top of the chest, and sometimes they don't really relax all the way. Just also with depression, I've noticed once when I was depressed that my chest was extended and I couldn't really let go in the exhalation, I couldn't relax all the way, and it was held. And then when I finally was able to release my chest, I don't know what came first, but anyway, correlating with releasing my chest, the exhalation could relax all the way, the depression went away. That was once. Impatience, short, jerky, uncoordinated breaths and tension in front of the chest. Guilt and self-judgment, restricted, suffocating breath and overall sensation of being weighed down. Boredom, shallow, lifeless breath and little sensation anywhere. Love, compassion, kindness, and wonder. Deep, comfortable breathing, open, energized, receptive feeling throughout the body. Sometimes I've talked to people about their breathing. And there's some interesting things I've discovered among some people about how deeply held attitudes about life, how attitudes in life can be deeply held or expressed in the way that they relate to breathing, the way breathing occurs. And maybe you have to be very still in order to kind of see the attitude sometimes embedded in the way some people breathe. Very calm, very still in the mind to see. Everything, a lot of stuff has to fall away so you can, that can, some of the subtleties can, but sometimes very profound issues, but subtle things can be seen. I've known people who discovered that they were reluctant to let go, reluctant to exhale. They were fine to breathe in, but they got to the top of the in-breath and there was kind of this very subtle reluctance to breathe out because they had something, kind of like they had something, they didn't want to give it up. So it's very subtle, you know. And then I've known people who, when they get to the near the end of the out-breath, don't really want to breathe out all the way because they breathe maybe halfway or two-thirds of the way out and then they breathe in. Because the out-breath for some people is a time of letting go, losing control. And losing control is not good, right? And so there's a kind of loss of control right there. And so some people will not let themselves breathe out all the way. I've known people who love the breathing out and the stillness at the end of the out-breath and then did not want to breathe in. Because breathing in was kind of a burden. It's kind of like the world impinging on them. You know, like, you know, stay away, please. And so there was kind of this little reluctance about breathing in. So maybe that's what I can remember right now. And the first time I kind of started hearing these kind of reports was when I did a guided meditation for people, a guided meditation on dying. It was directly out of Stephen Levine's book. And it has to do with you getting really kind of letting go and letting go and letting go, and letting go of your body, letting go of your emotions, letting go of all kinds of stuff in this guided meditation. And then finally, letting go, because it's your last breath, letting go of your breath also, just letting go of your breath. And it's coming out of that, and some people being guided can go very, very deep in their meditation practice in this kind of guided letting go, very still. And everything's gone in a sense, except that breath. And it's, people first started reporting to me this kind of, they saw these attitudes around the breathing when that was always left. So who knows what's going to happen when you die? But you're going to have your last breath too. And is that when you're going to discover your attitude that you have there? Uh-oh. So, so some of you don't have attitudes in your breath, I'm sure. Your breath just breathes itself, and it's very natural and easy, and nothing there. So I've been paying attention to my breath for 30 years. I still feel I have a tremendous amount to learn about my breath. And in some ways, not to discourage you, but actually encourage you, I feel like a novice still at it. And I find it increasingly inspiring, no pun intended. Increasingly, you know, interesting. I know that for not people new to this, all this, they can't imagine what's so interesting about the breath. And in fact, the breath seems inherently boring, just a mechanical thing. It's a physiological thing. You know, it's to get enough air in there. You know, and why do we focus on the breath? And a part of it is that the breathing is not just something we do to get air in. You know, the diaphragm and these muscles in our torso that connect to the breathing all get kind of geared up or get engaged in response to different emotions, different ways we respond to the world. And so our attitude, our emotions, our reactions, our responses to what's going on then are kind of connected to that, the muscles of breathing and the muscles of the torso. And so as we pay attention to the breathing, part of the way it's a teacher for us is it can reveal so much of what goes on in our life. It's a kind of like an open book for you to kind of learn and read what's going on in sometimes very subtle levels about in your inner life. The breath is also very helpful, I find. The way in which you can help paying attention to the breath can help cut through ways in which the mind is attached or preoccupied, identified with something. And just the simple act of coming and turning the attention away from its preoccupation and connecting it to the breath, just that movement, So back to the breath and back to the breath. It's counter to the usual tendencies of the mind often, when the mind is often caught by things and preoccupied. And before people start paying attention with their lives, some people will spend a lifetime being preoccupied and not know it. The tendency of the mind to be wrapped up in its thoughts. So just that simple act to come back to the breath can cut through so much. And then to learn to stay with the breath. To stay with 2-3 breaths, 5 breaths, 10 breaths, 100 breaths. Kind of stay with the rhythm of breathing. Breathing in, breathing out, staying there. Is a phenomenally useful act of learning to leave ourselves alone. And most of us would benefit a lot if we just left ourselves alone. Some people are their own enemy because of their inner attitudes, ideas, responses. They're I'm not good enough. I'm not this, that, I'm not that way. Self-critic inside. All these attitudes we have about ourselves, which can be so detrimental to our inner life, to our life. And if we can just leave ourselves alone, we get so much relief. And not kind of pile suffering upon suffering with the way we think about ourselves and feel about ourselves and all stuff. And so just stay with the breath. The breath, in a sense, can be seen as a neutral object. We can learn to, if you stay longer, you can stay with the breath, the more you can leave yourself alone. The precious energy, the precious resource of attention is going into the breath, rather than this precious resource of attention going to feed our neurosis. And so go back to the breath. Just be with the breath for a long time. Rest with the breath. Get absorbed in the breath. And you find this great benefit of just leaving yourself alone. As you probably, many of you know, breathing well, deeply, is very relaxing. Can be very relaxing, very calming. The first time I had an interview with a Buddhist teacher was with a Zen teacher. And I was in my early 20s. And I went into this little room and sat down, because in Zen you have interviews like this. And you sit cross-legged like this. The teacher, he or she, is sitting cross-legged right in front of you. It's very present there. And there I was with the Zen teacher for the first time. I was so nervous, I couldn't speak. And the teacher very kindly looked at me and said, "Gil, breathe deeply." And so I breathed deeply for a while. After a while, then I could speak. So I've come a long way. And now I can speak in front of all of you and still breathe. So just breathing deeply. People have panic attacks, are taught to breathe deeply. Sometimes to get brown bags and breathe into the brown bags, blow it up. So breathing can learn to leave ourselves alone. It can help cut through or preoccupation certain things. And the breathing is a tremendous place to begin reconditioning ourselves, changing ourselves. And this changing ourselves, I think, can be very important, very helpful. Even though we say a lot in mindfulness, strict mindfulness practice, strictly possible, don't do anything to change yourself, just be mindful. I think as a preliminary, before you get to that point, that's an advanced practice. Before you get to that point, it's good to change yourself. So try to cultivate, when you first sit down, a free breath. And if you've never done that, maybe spend a few months exploring your breath, getting to know it, and see what you can do to relax the breath and relax all the muscles connected to breathing. I find it very interesting the way that breathing can function as a massage from the inside. Sometimes I feel held. Sometimes I feel maybe some tension here in my chest because I'm holding something, or my belly, or my back rib cage, or my shoulders, or whatever. And it's very interesting to me to feel where the holding is. And every time I inhale, it's kind of like very gentle kind of pushing against it. I find it very, actually, sometimes in a certain kind of funny way, kind of enjoyable to push against the tension with the breathing. Very gently, not pushing hard, but just normal breath. And just being very aware of that. And then there's a relaxation, letting go, very aware. And it's wonderful to feel that. It's kind of getting a massage. And to work that, and slowly begins to relax and open up. It's very nice. And then there is the wonderful belly, where there are some people who hold a lot of tension in their belly. And I, for years, would hold my belly tight. And for years, I would focus in meditation, not focus, but beginning of meditation, I'd relax it. And I was really, after all, I got pretty good at relaxing the belly. Yes, all good at relax. And then it would tighten up again, usually about a second later. But, you know, it got relaxed. You know, that counted. And now I can feel pretty relaxed most of the time. You know, when I sit, it feels pretty relaxed. And it helps lower the center of gravity when you meditate to have your belly relaxed. I've met people for whom they've, especially women, who were taught as young women, as girls, maybe by their mother, to hold their belly in. They had to hold your belly in because it's unbecoming to hold your belly. They have your belly hang out. It's unwomanly, right? Hold your belly in. And I met one woman on a retreat who said that she talked about how when she meditated, she kept having to yawn and take these big breaths. And she couldn't understand. It was getting in the way of her meditation. So I didn't know what was going on either. But I thought, well, let's explore this as a guided meditation. Let's around her breathing. And so I had her, you know, close her eyes to meditate. And just as a way of warming up to do the guided meditation on her breath, I just told her, okay, relax and relax your belly. And she immediately burst into tears. And then she said, oh, you know, I've never been allowed to do that because I was always supposed to hold this woman was in her 60s. Maybe I should, I don't know how much I should tell you stories. This woman had been was a retired or ex-Buddhist, ex-Christian nun. And I was putting on a retreat at the convent where she had been a nun for 25, 30 years. And she came to the retreat. She'd left the nun, the convent. But she'd been quite senior there. So I was there at the opening evening, and some of the nuns lived there, kind of our hosts. They were kind of telling us how it worked there and where we could have the room where we were going to meditate in and things. And we had rented the facilities. And we were having a nice conversation with these two nuns. And then in walks this woman who had been, you know, senior nun in that monastery, that convent, for many years. And I didn't know that yet, that she had been a nun there. But as soon as she walked in, the two other nuns who were talking to me started attention. You know, you could see their breath go in, you know, stomachs go. Anyway, this ex-nun finally learned to relax her belly. If she'd relaxed her belly 20 years earlier, I wonder how that would have affected the rest of the convent. Lovely woman. She was I remember her fondly. So to spend some time learning to free up the chest, and that's a wonderful ally and help in daily life, because if you'll find yourself in daily life, it's completely normal and natural that the breath will change and morph how you breathe, different circumstances, you know, all kinds of different ways, depending on how you're feeling and what's happening, what's needed in the situation. Suddenly, maybe some kid that you know, your child or someone, is suddenly, you know, running across the street, your breathing is going to change when you see that, and it's appropriate. But there are times where we get stuck, and in certain ways, or we carry attitudes in our heads which are not necessary, but just kind of we carry them along with us. And it's really helpful to know, be able to tune into our breathing and recognize how it's changed, like have a baseline relaxed breath to know as a reference point, and then notice how it changes. And then, because you've learned to cultivate relaxing breath, to learn to kind of relax it when appropriate. And so, for example, if your boss is yelling at you, your breath might get tight and, you know, shallow and whatever. But since there's no real imminent danger, maybe he's not about to hit you, it might actually be to your benefit to relax your breathing at that point and be very relaxed, kind of learn how to relax it, breathe deeply. And then you might be able to respond to that inappropriate behavior in a much wiser way than if you're tense. And so as you relax your breathing, it's harder as you relax your breathing to stay uptight or angry yourself or resentful yourself or whatever you might afraid yourself. And so as you begin working your breath, you're also learning to work to change, hopefully in healthy ways, your inner emotional response and how you may be stuck in certain responses. I think of resentment as frozen anger. And so something is frozen. So what happens if... and I've known people who are been hear this kind of teachings and then say, you know, I don't know about this. I don't know if I want to relax my breathing. I don't know if I want to have a relaxed, open breath because I don't know what I have to let go of then. You know, I like, you know, I'm so used to my resentment, my fear, my anger. You know, it's like how who I am. And you're asking me to stop being who I am by breathing naturally and deeply? I've heard that from people. Isn't that amazing? No, it's normal. Or all too common. We hold on. So to learn, the way that breath becomes our teacher is we decide to learn from it. We have to learn from it. We have to start tuning into it and pay attention to it. Pay attention to it in many different circumstances in daily life. Pay attention to it while you're speaking, like I try to do while I talk to you. Pay attention to it, you know, when you're driving. You'll notice as you're driving that your breath, how you breathe will change depending on whether you're pushing to get fast there quickly, kind of rush, or if you just kind of like have all the time in the world to get to where you're going. It affects your breathing. Maybe it's very subtle, but you... And then if you feel that effect, then you can ask yourself, which breath would you prefer? Is it worth it? And I think sometimes I've noticed that if I tune into my breath when I'm driving, it's not worth it to have that, you know, the cost, the physical cost in the immediate present. You know, that. But it, often if you're in a hurry, you're fixated on the goal, you're not paying attention to you. So come back and pay attention here. Now, the beautiful thing about the breath also is that as the breath becomes more relaxed, more free, that then you have much more easy access to other things on this list I read earlier. Love, compassion, kindness, and wonder. That the capacity to feel those things occur much more as we are relaxed and open. As we feel love, that tends to relax. We feel happiness, it tends to relax the torso and the breathing in the torso. But if the breathing in the torso is relaxed and natural, then we're much more likely to feel, not guaranteed, but you're much more available to feeling things like love and kindness and joy and happiness and other things. One of the things I've noticed, you know, it's very hard to pay attention to the breath when you're speaking. And because I give so many Dharma talks, I've gotten lots of opportunities to practice paying attention to when I speak. I love this posture that I'm sitting in, cross-legged and like this. And you know, I talk after I've been meditating. And so I've learned a lot about what happens to my breathing when I'm talking, because I try to pay attention while I give these talks. And I've noticed, for example, that when I get a little bit if I get excited by what I'm talking about, or if I get a little concerned that I'm not getting something across and I have to try harder, you know, or concerned maybe you don't like what I'm saying, you know, all kinds of things go on, and I feel how it, you know, how it changes my breathing and my center of gravity in my torso, and my breath goes up here in my chest a little bit, and I lean forward a little bit, And then if I notice that and I settle back, and relax, bring my weight back on my sitting bones and back on my spine, and then I come back to being not so caught by my concerns, my worries. Are they liking my talk? Or whatever. It goes on. So it's great. And paying attention to the breath, I love it. And I feel like it saved me from so much suffering and stress in my life. And I hope that I really hope that all of you will take your breath quite seriously as a friend, an ally, a teacher. You'll pay attention to it, you'll explore it, you'll do what it takes to kind of free your breath to some degree. And that freedom of breath will make it a lot easier for you to go into meditation practice and go quite far and mature quite well in your meditation practice. Mencius, famous Chinese philosopher, said, "I am good at nourishing my flood-like breath. This breath is extremely vast and strong. I nurture it with straightforwardness and do not injure it, and so it fills everything between heaven and earth." May your breath be vast and strong and fill everything between heaven and earth. Thank you.